Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Desert Streaming Podcast. We have a great episode for you today with Father Paul Scalia of the Arlington Diocese. I just wanted to chime in and say, if you haven't followed us on our YouTube channel, make sure that you do so, so that whenever we get a new video up, you'll be sure to be the first to know. Thanks for tuning in. Okay, so we can start?
Yes.
All right. Well, Father Scalia, thank you so much for gathering with us.
Thank you for having me. This is a great, this is a treat and an honor.
Yeah, this is an honor for us.
This is a huge honor for us, so we very much appreciate it.
And where are you tuning in from, Father?
I'm in Falls Church, Virginia. I'm at my parish.
Okay, awesome.
So I thought I was going to be the chancery but worked out better. I'm here in the parish.
Now, Father, I know I've met you, and Andrew, I don't know if you met Father Scalia through Courage.
Yes.
But when was the first time you intersected with Courage?
So, this is a story of no good deed goes unpunished, right? Like if you have a good idea, you become a volunteer, right? So, back in 2000, 2000, maybe 2001, I was actually down in Spotsylvania, Virginia, at a parish there, and I got and all of the ministers and pastors and priests in the area got an invitation to a reception being held by, and I can't even remember the name of the group now, but it was similar to Courage or Living Waters, and so I had time, so I went, and then I was on the priest council for the diocese at the time, so at the next meeting I piped up and said, "Hey, just want to make the observation that we have the church's teaching here on human sexuality and homosexuality, but we don't have any means to help people live it. So I just want to make that observation." And of course,
just a slight note, slight critique.
What happens when you make that kind of observation? So the bishop at the time asked me to come up with a proposal.
Wow.
For the working group for the council to how to remedy this problem. So, I mean, it was a foregone conclusion. I knew the solution was Courage.
Oh.
So, actually, I took a trip up to Philadelphia. I met with Rick Fitzgibbons, old friend of the apostolate, and then I pushed on to New York, and I met with Father John Harvey and Father Paul Cech.
Mm-hmm.
Father Cech wasn't involved yet. He just right. He said, "Hey, I was going to go stay with him." So he said, "Well, I'll come down to New York, and we can," because he was interested in meeting Father Harvey. So the three of us went out for lunch. We met in Grand Central Station.
Oh my gosh.
And Father Harvey was, I think it was 150 at the time. we met with him, and he said, "Oh, well, there's a restaurant right around the corner. Just follow me." And he was, bam, he was off in a heartbeat. And then a couple years later, I established the Courage chapter in Virginia. And by that time, actually, Father Cech had started the one up in Bridgeport.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's historic that you were there when Paul Cech met John Harvey. Was that the first time Paul had met him?
I was there.
That's important.
Yes.
That's actually so important because 11 years later, or 10 years later, he was the director. Cech replaced the then deceased John Harvey. So
not yet deceased. They overlapped for a little bit.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, Father Harvey did sort of break him in a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Too.
And so for our maybe non-Catholic listeners, what is Courage? How do you explain it? Just for those who maybe aren't familiar with it, what is its purposes?
Well, gosh, that's a good question also for Catholic listeners.
Yeah, I know not. Yeah. The most popular offer the Catholic Church.
Forefront of most Catholic minds.
Yes.
So Courage was founded in 1980 by Father John Harvey. It was the idea of Cardinal Cook. And for the same reason, right? And he sees this need. He said, "Well, how do we address this need?" And 1980 in New York City. Think about that.
Wow.
AIDS
before AIDS, but at the height of disco and everything else.
Yeah, that was a crazy time in New York City.
And so Father, well, now Cardinal O'Brien, Father Benedict Rochelle, and Father John Harvey, they met and they kind of hatched this plan. Father Harvey had been doing some work in this regard, actually down in this area, in Northern Virginia. And then he started the first Courage chapter up there in New York. The first members put together the five goals of courage, which I should have right here on hand, but I don't.
Oh, Marco got it. Marco, what are they?
Oh gosh, I don't have them, but we can put them in the show notes. Kidding. I'm like, do I have them?
Nicely done. I like the way you did that, dude.
Thank you. Yeah, I was like, oh, well, Marco obviously should know that.
I was just enjoying the conversation, like, doo-doo-doo. I'll put them in the show notes, though.
So, and then from there, and what Courage is it's a very the beginnings are very modest, and the purpose is very modest, but as all things in the gospel, it's a small thing, but it's also extremely important. And it's simply this, is that we want to help men and women who experience same-sex attractions to live chastity. And by living that chastity, to grow in holiness and to grow in union with Christ. That's it, you know. Mm-hmm. And courage is sometimes painted as reparative therapy, or as like we're chasing down people and forcing them into chastity. It's like, well, no, we just listen. We know that there are people who want to live this. We want to help them live this. In fact, there was a Courage conference in St. Louis in, this would have been 2005 or six. Father Harvey was still the director, and there was a big kerfuffle in the media about Courage being present in the city, and so he went to nip it in the bud, and he met with the press, and he said these people want to live chastity, we want to help them. What's the problem?
Yeah,
and a lot of the press just kind of looked at each other, and said, yeah, that kind of makes sense, doesn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
So now in its growth throughout the country and throughout the world. Because Courage is a worldwide organization, Courage has also undertaken a lot of large educational dimension, and so a lot of the work is speaking to groups of priests, bishops, if we can, to family life directors in dioceses and youth directors. Our former executive director, Father Bochansky, he spoke to the Focus missionaries, I think every summer. So that is also a very, very important part. And, and most, sort of veteran members of Courage get tapped to, I've been asked to speak to youth groups and to, youth ministers and things and things like that. So it's kind of a two-pronged thing. The heart of it are the chapters for men and for women, just so they can meet. Ideally, it's to meet weekly. There's a priest present, and they're there to provide mutual support in living out chastity. Not just white knuckling it through chastity, like, okay, I'm just, I'm not going to act out today, but really the virtue of chastity, which is that peaceful integration of one's sexuality, and for the purpose of holiness, not just for the purpose of being chaste. Chastity is not a virtue for its own sake; it's a virtue for charity. So that's the heart of everything, and then there's also the educational component.
Well, we love Courage here at Desert Stream, and we were founded the same year. Maybe you can tell us a little bit, Andrew, how you've intersected with Courage.
Yeah, I intersected with John Harvey probably in 82 or 3. We had been going since 1980. And Father Harvey, I was charismatic evangelical. I was not Catholic, though I loved the Catholic Church then. I understood its foundational reality, but I did not come to faith through a Catholic parish. But John Harvey was so outreaching and welcoming of the work that we were doing in those days. And so I met him, I think it was in Baltimore, and just such a deep and a dear and a humble man to be meeting with us, kind of Jesus people, free churchers. And he was so outreaching, and I think he liked the spark that we had and the faith that we had in transformation. So the element of chastity, which is about integration and is about really trusting Jesus for more, that not living under the low ceiling that my goal is to integrate my homosexuality. No, my goal is to be reconciled to my masculinity and to the otherness of woman as well. And he loved that. And I think it was maybe in the mid-90s or so, he actually asked me to speak at a Courage conference. And because he loved our emphasis on the Imago Dei and not distancing ourselves from our responsibility to the other. Even though Courage in some ways didn't take it that far, he believed that that was at the core of every person's destiny, as far as not marriage, but making peace with oneself and the other. And he realized that had to be operative in our understanding of what it means to be human. And I so appreciated that. And I have great early experiences with Courage, and then of course becoming Catholic, and that's where I met you, Father, which has been such a gift. And Paul Cech, just essential to my formation as a Catholic, as was John Harvey. So grateful. Yeah.
I'm trying to get in my mind. I just think it's wonderful that Father Harvey, who was a very staid and calm and sort of kind of by the book, sort of old fashioned guy.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to imagine him with all the charismatics.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It was wild.
And, yes.
And what I love is that his capacity to look at that and say, you know, it's not my cup of tea, but there's something good there, and I come on, you know.
Yes.
And the Courage conferences have always had that component, haven't they?
Yes, and he made us better, and I think maybe constellated, but also pulled out some of the anti-Catholic bias that would have been in the group. And he was a bridge for many Northeastern Catholic fathers and brothers and sisters, coming into our world. Mm-hmm. And what a cool guy.
One thing I really appreciate about Courage is that they're a custodian of a solid anthropology of what it means to be human. And I feel like we really need that, not only in the greater context today, but especially in our church. And I like what you said, Andrew, that it's about making peace with one's own masculinity, femininity, and trying to learn how to give the gift to the other in some way and not integrating one's homosexuality. Can we speak a little bit about that? Because I think that's actually been, I find it coming to the surface in some pockets of the church where it is more, well, let's just integrate your homosexuality or integrate your quote-unquote gayness, instead of, well, what does it actually look like to make peace with your own sexuality and to learn how to give and receive in that? So if we can just maybe discuss that.
And when you
bit.
Say integrating your homosexuality, you're meaning like kind of reconciling the fact that, no, I am I'm a gay man, I'm a gay woman, and even as a Christian, that's kind of who I was created to be. Is that kind of what you're
exactly
to?
Like a lot of like the gay Christian or gay Catholic movements that sort of don't really look at trying to integrate deeper still this inherent identity as man, and instead sort of just, I would see a bit of a stalling in, I'm going to assume the fracture as my identity.
That's a great way of putting assuming the fracture as my identity. Let me just if I can jump in here, just say, first of all, I think that's a very bad habit in our culture, just in general, people using the fracture to define them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just in this arena, but I think a lot of people allow their defects, allow their wounds to define them. And so that's I think just a bad habit just in general in our culture, in this sphere in particular regarding human sexuality. I guess the question comes down to: is there a truth about human sexuality? Is there a design to it? And I guess the question is: what's it for? Because if we claim that, okay, yes, I, you know, that the fracture becomes the identity, that these same sex attractions, that then you have to say, okay, well, then what's human sexuality for? If it can go this way or that way, then why can't it go a third way, which many people have concluded it can, right? So, and I think that that's why it's a crisis of understanding of the human person, because this is so, so foundational to who we are. If we don't understand its design and its purpose and its proper realization, then we're at odds with ourselves, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then I don't know. And you know, that's most of the work in at Courage meetings, you know. I think people think it's just like guys, you know, sitting around talking about how they're trying to avoid gay sex. it's a matter of what does it mean to be a man? Yeah. Or what does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be masculine? What does it mean to be feminine? Mm-hmm. And it proceeds from this conviction that, okay, we are designed in a certain way. Our bodies teach us that. Therefore, there's a truth to this, and it needs to be lived out. Mm-hmm. There's not a person in the world that's experienced this in well, except Our Lady and St. Joseph, right? Okay. There's not a person
Holy
in the
Family
world.
Aside.
Right.
The Holy Family aside.
With all due respect.
With all due respect.
There's no one in the world that experiences this is a perfectly harmonious thing, mm-hmm. right? We are all wounded to some degree because of original sin, because of our own sins. But we don't, I love that, Mark, we don't make the fracture the identity. Mm-hmm. So just some initial thoughts there.
Yeah, and I think we at Desert Stream really stand with that in Courage. You know, I feel like Courage is a clarion call to that today. So I'm grateful all the Courage listeners who have been steadfast in maintaining that. I just think of a few who are really so faithful to Jesus in their sexuality, are faithful through their own struggle of confusion, and they've really maintained stability on the rock. So I love that. I think we need more of that. I'm a big fan of that. So thank you for all those Courage listeners who are maintaining that anthropology.
And I have maybe pastoral questions for you, Father, and for you, Father. Two fathers here.
Right.
Two
Andrew's become
two of
a
my
priest.
Fathers.
His father and dad.
No, he makes me call him father, but only on the podcast. Yeah. He's kind of like kicking me under the table. Yeah. You can't see it, Father, but he's kicking me. But so kind of two issues, right? We have both sort of, you need a proper anthropology, but also pastorally. So you have people, maybe more of a generation that is so apt to identify with their wound. My wound is my identity. My fracture is who I am. And there's a sort of, I don't want to say victim mentality, but like you can't really diminish my hurt, my pain. So how do you pastor people who are coming to you who really do identify? Their fracture is their identity that's so vulnerable and ingrained in them. Like how do you pastor your sheep well, who kind of come that way because it's so sensitive and vulnerable, and I think increasingly what we see. And so how do you both are pastors, so what is a way of sort of
it's a great question.
Loving those people well unto the truth and unto a proper understanding of biblical anthropology?
Well, I would say, just and not to answer the question, I don't think most people would even claim that it is a wound.
Yeah.
I think it would be a birthright. It's who I am versus who you are. So let's get on with it. So I would say that's probably the biggest pastoral challenge, even for identified Christians, not, oh, it's my wound, but I can't give up the identity. A wound at least implies something is disordered. I think most people are, I'm just differently ordered. And the only problem with homosexuality is the one you have with it. So it's more put on the one who would be saying, well, can't we see this as something that's open to Jesus' saving love? You know, that's at least a good starting point. But I would
think that that's, how authentic do you think that is? Do you think that's whistling past the graveyard? You know what I mean? That like just sort of insisting that this is normal and no, I'm, because I sense in a lot of people, I guess if you're really at peace with things, you're not given to extremes. you know? And so I think at demonstrations and stuff like that, you see, you know, insistence that, that this is part of who we are, but also like it's kind of extreme in your face. And I think if you're at peace with who you are, and if you really see it as part, a natural part of who you are, you're not going to be as extreme about things.
Yeah. Even with all the cultural accommodation to LGBTQ identification, there must be at some level a realization like something's just amiss in me, like something's not landing right about the way I'm relating to the same and to the other, right? Would you say that, Andrew?
I mean, of course, objectively, I agree with that. I don't think that's carrying the cultural day, right. Is not our point, but it is to say we have to deal with that, especially with a generation that would see LGBTQ rights as the ultimate in social justice.
Yeah.
So that is a hill that, you know, the under 25 set would be more likely to die on at this point, rather than I'm championing your original dignity, which would be our language and point of view. Yeah. So I still think that's the truth, but I'm also looking at cultural currents.
And the pastoral challenge still remains, to Katie's point. And yeah, I was just speaking with a priest who lives here in the rectory, and he's studying psychology. And he was just speaking about how difficult it is for people who, especially if they've been abused or they're just or trauma from the past, to leave aside the identity. And because we all build up scaffolding, right? To kind of make it through trauma, make it through life. And for a lot of people, they just kind of, that scaffolding remains, right? And it's defense mechanisms, it's identities that people latch onto. And he was saying that it's very, very difficult psychologically for somebody to put that aside, because there's a fear of, is there anything of me left?
Yeah, yeah.
If that's gone.
Yes.
And I was reminded of the account of our Lord going to the Gerasenes, right? And the demoniac who is terrorizing the countryside. And then our Lord exorcises him, and the villagers come out, and the demoniac is sitting there, and he's fully clothed. He's in his right mind. He's peaceful. And what do? They ask our Lord to leave. And it's a facet. Now, of course, he'd put the swine herds out of business. Okay, so that maybe that was it.
They were the pig farmers.
Yeah,
but there is just this fascinating thing that we do make peace with the things that afflict us, and we're hesitant to receive what can free us. We're just very weird creatures. We do what's comfortable, not what's best for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would agree. And I would say, as to your question, Katie, I believe, and I know some therapists might challenge this, but I would say it requires encounter with Jesus. So if you're long baptized, long confirmed, whatever, I do think there is something about awakening, the eyes of one's heart being open to this Jesus, and there being some kind of a shift, body, soul, and spirit, that brings about something that frees one to say, I actually am in great need. And my defense, my homosexual identification, whatever that is, actually, that frees one then, it's at least the inklings of saying, that's actually a defense against reality. And we see this all the time, but I think it requires kind of a gentle invitation to conversion. I think it also involves community.
Yeah.
So what you're saying about the Courage group, a Living Waters group, something that says, I'm actually turning towards this Jesus in a new way, but I'm also turning towards his members, towards his body in a new way. And I don't think you can have one without the other in this sort of sexual, moral shift, and this shift in identification. So that's what I would encourage or see.
Yeah, and I think that point about you can't have one without the other, and it really, most people are, well, I mean, this is throughout the history. We only know Jesus because of his presence in the church. Mm-hmm. We know him. We don't know him directly.
Yeah.
we always know him through his mm-hmm. his body, the church. Mm-hmm. And so when the members of the church really sort of love someone mm-hmm. and just say, yeah, okay, I know you know warts and all. Yeah. And that was this experience of this priest I was talking to. He's just meeting with a woman who claimed to be a lesbian, and just as the meetings went on, just like she kind of lowered her guard more, and she kept, you know, stopped doing this as much, and was just more open and less hostile. And it was simply because she probably for the first time in her life, you know, encountered a strong man who was good to her, and allowed her just to be candid. And just said, okay, that's who you are, and just tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I think that's the challenge to members of the church, mm-hmm. which also means because I think a lot of times members, Christians have more of this posture, mm-hmm. right? Because we see how dangerous things are and how confused the culture is.
Yeah. Yes, and then we lose sight of a person. We stop thinking of a person who's defensive and, you know, a little unbecoming in their openness to us, lack thereof.
the latter.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you're right. There's like this, there's this cultural thing going on, and then there's a person. There's someone who, by the grace of God, is in front of us asking guarded questions. But there's a little opening. And so of course with courage and encourage being for parents, I would say the encourage participation has eclipsed the courage members' participation.
Doubt.
Like
no
that
doubt.
Was evident in Atchison last year. There were so many more parents saying, Father, how do I walk this out with estranged sons and daughters? And I think, boy, it's
and that point about the personal, I think that's the heart of the apostolate. Mm-hmm. And there's an old saying in ministry that all youth ministry is one-on-one. I don't know if you've ever heard that, which is, you know, you have these big events for youth groups, right? And they'll get all these kids, but that doesn't really accomplish anything. I think that's true for all ministry.
Yeah.
For all care for souls is that. But in this area, I think even more, because people are so quick to, I want a ready at hand word or solution, or, you know, just, and so parents will come, they just want kind of the quick solution. And when, you know, we sit down with them and say, well, this is really going to stretch you, but you just have to love your child first of all, the way your child is, and then see where that goes, and love your faith, love the truth, it, you know, be faithful in every way, but continue to love your child, and you're going to be stretched. and they went, no, I just
yeah.
is there a pill for this or something? And it's the difficult work of you know, just being attentive to the person, right? Mm. And acknowledge, and I think a lot of times the persons themselves kind of don't want that. I remember, you know, this was very, I wouldn't recommend this tactic, but I knew the guy already, so I could get away with it. But he came in and he said to me, he said, Father, I'm gay. And I said, no, you're not. And he kind of thought, like, you know, it's the Jedi mind trick. What's he doing? He said, no, I am. I said, no, you're not. And so, okay, I had his attention at that point, but he really kind of wanted to just sort of like adopt a persona, because a persona is easier than a person, and so it's easier. Like, okay, don't deal with me; deal with my persona.
Yeah, right?
You know, and it's a challenge. Say, no, I want to know you. I don't want to know the persona. Mm. And so I said, no, you're not gay. That's not who you are. you are a man and you're experiencing same-sex attraction. You're experiencing homosexual inclinations. Okay. But let's get to who are you?
Yeah.
And that's a much different thing than just the labels.
That's awesome. Hey, everybody. We hope you really enjoyed this first segment of a two-part show with Father Paul Scalia. Remember, if you liked this, make sure you share it with your friends. We want to get this podcast out far and wide. Thanks for tuning in today. God bless you.